The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Now, following the stabbing incident in Belfast and the subsequent disorder and far-right mobilisation we've seen on the streets, including here in Dublin, questions are being raised about how violence is amplified and turned into these political flashpoints. To help us, I suppose, understand the dynamics at play from a culture of violence to online escalation, I'm joined now by Gemma McSherry, who's a writer who has previously worked with Amnesty and The Guardian. Gemma, lovely to have you here on the programme. Look, I suppose you grew up in Northern Ireland yourself. I'm interested in what you saw or what you absorbed as a young person around violence and identity that you think we might see playing out in the riots we've seen in Belfast over the last couple of days.
Yes, that's right. I grew up in Oudenards, which is a bit of a loyalist stronghold in the north. And there is a culture there of violence that a lot of the people who are out in the streets now are being brought up in, and they don't know anything else other than it. To give you an example, when I would walk home from school, I would see, you know, murals on the walls, which are sometimes now a bit of a sort of thing that people go and see as tourists in Belfast. But what those murals depict is violence, and they send a message to the people in this area that violence is the only way to kind of be a big man, to feel important. And these people are growing up in a culture where violence is completely and utterly normalised. A lot of the people going out in the street are kids as well, and a lot of these kids are being groomed into this culture of violence from, like, you know, a very, very young age.
You say for these Belfast boys, this is in your article, this is the title, violence is a rite of passage. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so like I say, this culture is very much based around violence as domination. And especially in these sorts of estates where these boys are being brought up, the way to express yourself, the way to sort of feel like you are important, feel like you matter, is to take part in what this violence is and what it has always been, which is ultimately, you know, loyalist dominance that we've seen for generations in the north.
And it is a difficult, I think, point for loyalists, but it is worth pointing out that most of the major riot and public order incidents that have attracted significant attention in Northern Ireland in recent years have originated in or been concentrated in loyalist areas and have involved substantial loyalist participation. But I do think it's important not to overgeneralise, because both loyalist and republican areas contain, you know, a wide range of views and experiences. And I am conscious too, Gemma, that we've seen similar outbreaks of disorder in Dublin in recent years involving very different communities. Does that suggest that we do, though, need to be careful about explaining this, you know, purely through local history or community culture? Is there something else that could be driving it?
I think there's a couple of factors. Obviously, the rise of misinformation in social media, and there was a Forbes article that came out in 2024, which said that 70% of online accounts in Ireland are bots, B-O-T, bot accounts. So those are accounts that are being run by bot farms, and there's various different reasons that that could be, and there's various different actors at play. But the reason that I'm kind of trying to situate this within understanding loyalism is because we are seeing almost the loyalisation of the rest of the UK and of Ireland as well. And by that I mean the way that people are groomed into violence. They are groomed into going out into the street, and they are sort of now given permission to be openly racist, to be openly violent in the street, in the same way that we have seen in the north for a very long time.
How much influence, in your opinion, Gemma, do loyalist paramilitary structures still have over what's happening on the ground in these communities?
I think they have a lot of influence, especially when it comes to the policing response. So if you look at some of the videos, you will see that, you know, cars are being set on fire in the street. You'll see men patrolling the streets. There's not a great deal of police presence there. Also, it's important to note that this was happening exactly this week last year in the north. So there were gangs going around in East Belfast in particular, stopping people, stopping men of colour in particular, asking them for their ID documents. And that was happening exactly this week last year. This is riot season. It's the start of riot season. It's the start of marching season. And the paramilitaries know that they sort of have almost a mandate, in a sense, from the police to get away with a certain level of violence, as we've seen, you know, every single year that this comes around.
What was interesting in Belfast over the last couple of days was, I suppose, to look at the organisation behind these protests,
yes,
to see all of these individuals dressed in similar clothing, all wearing masks, none of them using phones, all very conscious of not, I suppose, recording anything that could be used as evidence. Does that concern you?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the way that social media is sort of bringing people together, and like you say, this is coming now from different sides. You know, in the North, historically, this type of racist violence has generally just been loyalist. But like you say, we are now seeing people from across the sectarian divide coming out on the streets and taking part in this. And a lot of that is to do with social media. People are being taught how to be better at being violent. They are being taught through social media how to organise these gangs and how to go out and, you know, make sure that they aren't being caught in what they're doing. And that is very, very scary. And that is an escalation of the type of violence that we've been seeing for years.
Is there a difficulty, though, Gemma, that within these loyalist communities, that there is real deprivation, there's a real lack of opportunity for a lot of these young people? There is a higher level of migrant communities in these loyalist areas. There's a higher degrees of these houses of multiple occupancies, which became such mm-hmm. a target within these loyalist areas. And that those are factors too that are at play here.
Completely. And deprivation is a tool of control within these communities, especially with regards to our, you know, unionist politicians in the North. Our politicians have kept these people and kept these areas deprived for so, so long. A lot of these people, and I, you know, a lot of my family have been, I've spent a lot of time in these loyalist council estates in my childhood. There was no swing parks. There was no places to play even football matches in some of them. But what there was areas to have bonfires. So these communities are very, very deprived. We've also seen in the North that, you know, Catholics or people from Catholic backgrounds now are doing much better in terms of education, in terms of building wealth. So deprivation is at the heart of all of this. It's at the heart of why these people want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, bigger than the communities that they grew up in.
So what has happened then to the investment in Northern Ireland that is seeing sort of Catholic communities, you say, growing in wealth and having greater prospects than those loyalist communities? How has that happened?
I think it's down to the politicians, the unionist politicians. And I mean, look, I'm not saying that any of these politicians are doing a particularly great job in the North, but the unionist politicians have always ran on a sort of hate-fueled agenda. And they know fine rightly that these boys in particular are going to buy into that agenda because it gives them something to belong to.
And yet, to be fair, I did hear politicians from both sides mm-hmm. of the divide come out this
yeah.
week and actively encourage people not to get engaged in violence, to stay at home, to not listen to those far-right online agitators, to think about their futures. I heard that across the board, Gemma, to be fair.
Yes, I mean, the politicians do a good job of coming out after the event and condemning it. But this kind of hatred has been, you know, the flames have been fanned for a very long time. And there have been warnings that this was getting worse. And I do think that a lot of these, in particular, the hardline unionist politicians, I think they know fine rightly what they're doing.
So you think there's a real sort of grievance narrative there that is being pushed. You also write that you feel that there's a real danger here, that this culture of grievance, this culture of anger is being passed on to the generation. So mm-hmm. what do you think then would actually break that cycle in Northern Ireland?
Well, we have seen some great interventions before. For example, the Northern Ireland Women's Coalition was women who came across from across the divide. So there was people from a, you know, Protestant background, from a Catholic background, and they came together and they were instrumental in the Good Friday Agreement and the drafting of the Good Friday Agreement to get women's issues on the table, to get children's issues on the table, and to kind of take it out of the binary of, you know, violent men fighting violent men. So there have been great initiatives like this in the past. Unfortunately, a lot of the funding has been cut for these sort of community programs, but it's really community level intervention that's going to change this and that's going to make things better. And like I say, a lot of these estates, there is nothing. Even the estate that I spent a lot of time in my childhood on, the community centres gone. It's been closed down. So there really needs to be community level intervention and community level support to get these kids off their phones and to try and stop this culture and this generational hate.
And I think for any of us who have spent any time in Northern Ireland or have travelled around Northern Ireland, as I have, you can actually see that deprivation. You can actually see those communities suffering. It's actually pretty obvious. It's not like it's hidden. So it should be something that politicians are aware of. OK, we're going to have to leave that conversation there for now. But my thanks to Gemma McSherry for speaking to us here.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.